Good evening. This is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is freelance writer and broadcaster Philip Ball. And we're talking about his book, The Book of Minds, How to Understand Ourselves and Other Beings, from Animals to AI to Aliens. Phil, welcome to the show. It's a real pleasure to talk to you about this book.
Oh, thanks for inviting me, Mark.
Now, whatever put you over the edge to write a book about the mind? Because talk about a subject that is such a huge subject and a quagmire and goes in all sorts of directions. Why did you decide to write a book on the mind?
Yeah, I know. It was a little crazy, and it arose out of a tiny little seed and suddenly became this huge thing. It began years ago when I was asked by a science magazine if I might look into writing an article about an aspect of AI. The AI that we have today is kind of treated like a black box, and we don't quite know what's sort of going on inside it. So, you know, we give it input, and it sort of gives us an answer. And I was asked to write this, to look into writing this article that was a sort of about attempts to open up that black box and finding out what goes on inside. And, you know, it seemed like, I mean, it's obviously an important as well as an interesting question. And I kind of looked around for a bit, and I was having trouble finding people who really thought about this from a broad perspective rather than just a kind of technical perspective. And so I put it on the back burner for a while, but it always, you know, just sort of sat there, and it was kind of, you know, coming back to me. And then it was really when I... a few years ago, I was a visitor at Harvard for one summer. It was in 2019, and I got there, and you know, Harvard, that whole area, the Cambridge, Boston, MIT, Harvard area, is just such a hotbed of people who are thinking about problems of cognition from so many different angles. So you have people working on AI, you have people in robotics, in animal behavior, in neuroscience, and they're all talking to each other. And it was something about being there that suddenly it was actually a combination of that, and I just happened to look in the local library where I was staying in Brookline. And there was a book about, it was called The Biological Brain, and it was by Alan Jasanoff, who's a neuroscientist at MIT. And as I kind of, I was intrigued, and I started looking through it, and suddenly it all twigged. I thought, well, the reason I haven't written this article is it's not an article. It has to be a book.
Oh, yeah.
It has to be a book about how minds work. And, you know, we're not really going to get a context for understanding how AI works until we understand how our minds work. And, in order to do that, we need to make a sort of comparative study of how other minds work, how animal minds work, and to put the whole lot together. And so suddenly it ballooned into this crazy project. But fortunately, I was in exactly the right part of the world to go and talk to people about that, and had some fantastic conversations, and it went from there.
I'm amazed the book is as short as it is, and it's not that short. But I mean, you covered, not only do you cover the things that you just talked about, but you even start asking questions about recognizing alien minds and God having a mind. Amazing. You've crossed the line at that point.
Well, I guess, you see, Mark, I guess I've always sort of had this, you might call it a failing, but I figure if you're going to do a job, you've got to do it properly. You know, some years ago, I wrote a book about invisibility, and I realized, you know, it's such a fantastic topic, but I realized that really to do justice to that, I had to not just write about attempts to make sort of invisibility cloaks today, which people are doing.
Yep.
This is fascinating work. I had to talk about the legends of invisibility going back to Plato. I had to talk about fairy tales. I had to talk about ghosts.
Oh, man.
Because all of this stuff, and I had to talk about microbes and the discovery of, you know, microscopic organisms, because all of this stuff is relevant to that cultural
idea. Absolutely. Now I want to talk about that book, and I haven't even read it yet. Okay, we got to start on this, because otherwise we only have 25 minutes. You know, one of the central problems, and people may not realize this, is we think we have a mind, the individual person, but how do we know that other people or animals have a mind? How do we know that they're not just rational zombies, some kind of weird AI? I mean, how do I know that you have a mind?
Yeah, well, the truth is you don't. And as far as we can see at the moment, you can't because, you know, we are trapped inside our minds. All we can do, I mean, this is an age-old question. It was really the one that René Descartes in the 17th century pondered and, you know, led to him saying, the only thing I can be sure of is that I think, and therefore I exist, therefore I am. So that question has always been there. And I would say the answer we have to get, we have to make in the end is we sort of do it by induction, by reason. That wouldn't it be really weird if I was the only one that had a mind like mine, but other people seem to respond in ways that are so similar to the way I do. You know, the reactions that they have, everything seems recognizable, you know, from the perspective of my own perspective, so of my own experience. So, you know, it's a rational assumption to make. But in the end, we can do no more than that. We have to make that assumption in order to kind of live our lives, but we can never be sure of that because there is no way of getting outside our minds and into someone else's, none that we know of at the moment, at any rate.
One of the interesting things you write right in the beginning is, as a species, we've evolved to see minds every damned place we look, quote. So that begs the question, okay, if humans have minds, does most animal life have mind? What about plants? Do plants have minds? And how can we know that? And that takes up a lot of space in your book, and that's a big question. And it seems like only in the last couple of decades have humans been able to even open themselves up to the fact that there are other minds living on this earth.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is this curious thing that we are seemingly hardwired by evolution to attribute mind all over the place. You know, we attribute, obviously, you know, in distant past, we attributed it to the gods. We attributed it to nature, to the wind, you know, and so forth. And yet at the same time, we've had a long history of trying to elevate ourselves and saying we're the only ones with minds and, you know, animals. I mean, this is, again, coming back to Descartes, he suggested that actually other animals don't really have minds in the sense that they're not really sentient in the way that we are. They're more like just kind of machines, like automata. So, you know, we've had this long-standing prejudice about us being somehow special. And what the central framework that I tried to bring into to organize all this material in the book is the notion of a space of possible minds.
That was totally new to me, and I found that pretty brilliant.
Yeah, well, that you see, that was the one thing that I came across when I was doing this research for this abortive article on AI that I never wrote. But the one thing I came across that stuck with me was it was an article from 1984 by a computer scientist named Aaron Sloman at the University of Birmingham here in the UK. And he came up with this idea that there is a space of possible minds, a sort of abstract space. There are coordinates to it. What are they? Are they things like intelligence, memory?
And you can actually graph this.
Yeah, exactly. That we can start to, you know, we don't really know what those coordinates are, but I just found that idea of, you know, some kind of multidimensional space in which minds exist was such a useful one. And somewhere in that is the human mind, or a little cloud of human minds, because our minds are all, you know, diverse within a certain range. But outside of that, probably quite close, are the minds of animals like great apes, other great apes. And, you know, somewhere in there are the minds of birds and so forth. And then we can, but what else lies there? You know, what is the topography of that space? And that's what, you know, led me to start thinking, well, what kinds of minds can exist? What kinds of minds might we imagine aliens to have? Yeah. And what kinds of minds can we build? You know, we're at the moment, there's no reason to think that our AI has anything like a mind in the sense of a conscious mind, that it has anything like awareness. But there's no reason we know of why that couldn't be done, why that couldn't happen at some point. And what I wanted to really stress here is to get away from thinking there is a kind of mind, we know what it is, we have it, other beings or other entities have it to a greater or lesser degree. So, you know, the dog mind is kind of like a human mind, only a bit less. You know, the dials are turned down, and even less so for the fish and so on. I wanted to say, no, there's no reason to think that. They're just somewhere else in this space. Some of them, certainly some animals, have attributes of mind, you know, like the, for example, the migrating bird that can sense the Earth's magnetic field.
Right, right.
You know, that's something that is totally outside of our experience and our capability, and yet we know that they have it. So I think this idea of a space of possible mind, it sort of advises us to be a bit humble. we're just somewhere in that, and there's lots of other space in there where minds, I suspect, can exist.
Now, here comes the big question. The most basic question is, do we even have a working definition of mind?
Yeah, well, we don't. I mean, you know, this is something I also had to grapple with. And, you know, and it's something that some people have sort of taken, you know, contention with in what I talked about, because there is no consensus about that. And I chose not in any dogmatic way, but just as a kind of working definition, I chose to say that for something to have a mind, there has to be something it is like to be that thing. So, you know, I don't personally think, although even this isn't agreed by everyone, but I don't personally think that being like a rock is being like anything at all. I don't think there is anything to be like to be a rock. There clearly is for humans. I think most people would be happy to imagine that there's something it is like to be a dog.
Is there something to be like to be a bacterium?
Well, that's it. And you ask the question about plants too, and I'm agnostic about that, but I'm open to the idea that there could be. But I think in a way, in the end, you know, that was a working definition to get the ball rolling. I'm much more interested in this question of, you know, what are the characteristics of those organisms that are mind-like characteristics. So whether or not they have anything we could recognize as consciousness or awareness, they can certainly, plants can certainly, you know, respond to stimuli.
That's right.
Some plants will sort of turn to follow the sun. Some plants will fold their leaves when they're touched. We have no reason to think that they do that, you know, that they feel anything when they do that, but we don't really have any reason to suppose they don't either. And, you know, it's getting at those questions that is the hard part, but there is a lot of ingenious work going on to really try to pin down, you know, whether we can say anything about whether plants, for example, or bacteria have experience. Some biologists now believe that everything that is alive has a kind of experience of some sort. It's very hard to say what, but of some sort, purely by virtue of being alive. And that's almost a kind of a definition or an inevitable byproduct of being alive. And again, I'm agnostic about that, but I find it a really intriguing idea.
Now, here's the other $64,000 question. What's consciousness and how is it related to mind?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I realized, you know, this was something I would have to deal with in the book. There are endless books, of course, about...
I know, and I've interviewed a lot of the authors, and you do an amazing job of synthesizing the information in this book. But you could get bogged down in the weeds here, like incredibly.
Yeah. Well, what I wanted to really make clear is, you know, up front is to say we don't know what consciousness is. And there is no theory that everyone accepts of what that is. I mean, some people think that consciousness is in some sense somehow an illusion, which I don't quite understand how that can be so. You know, it is what we experience it to be. But we don't have we certainly don't have a theory of it. And I wanted to sort of make that very clear, because, you know, you can find, as you say, any number of books that, you know, have titles like Consciousness Explained or Consciousness Demystified or something. And most of them, probably all of them, have something interesting to say. So, you know, there are plenty that are worth reading, but none of them is going to give you the answer. And I wanted to make that clear in my book. But also, I wanted, you know, within this notion of a space of possible minds, it sort of became clear to me, and this is something that certainly many animal behaviorists are saying now, we have no reason to think that consciousness either is a single
That's
thing
right.
that we have
right.
more or less of. And I think that consciousness, that there are probably different degrees, but different dimensions of consciousness, different types of consciousness. If we ever succeed in making a conscious machine of some sort, I don't think there's any reason to suppose that it will have the same kind of consciousness that we have.
That's right.
And, you know, that, of course, is the real problem, because then how do you know? How do you measure it? How do you quantify consciousness? Nobody knows. And until we have some kind of better theory for understanding how it arises in the human mind, I don't see how we're going to get close to answering that question.
Well, that seems to be a central problem with AI research right now, is that they're developing machines, in the broad sense of the word, that seem to be mimicking what they think is a human mind. But is that the right way to go? Maybe machines should be developing their own mind.
Well, actually, to some degree, I think what the AI researchers are starting to think now is maybe they need to do that more. But actually, you know, what they've tended to do, I mean, now a lot of today's advanced AI uses a technique called machine learning, where basically you just feed it. It's just an algorithm that you feed a load of training data. So you show it, for example, loads of pictures of cats, you know, in different poses and different situations, and it is able to recognize what a cat should be. And it does, on the whole, pretty well. And then looking at other images that it hasn't seen before, hasn't been trained on, and it can say whether or not there's a cat in them. So, you know, that's the way it works. But it's clearly not the way the human mind works. Small children don't have to be shown 10,000 images of cats. They somehow, you know, they see two or three cats.
And they can generalize.
And they can generalize not just to seeing a cat walk, you know, across the path. They can understand that a cartoon cat is a cat too, and that it's different from a cartoon dog.
And
how do they do that?
And people don't realize that machines, computers, can't do that. That it's incredibly difficult for machines to do that, to look at a couple of, like, a cartoon cat and still recognize it as a cat.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's still, you know, it's amazing what it can do already with this sort of approach. But it's also really sobering, you know, what kind of mistakes it makes. Sometimes, you know, AI will misclassify images in the weirdest way that would make us think, you know, are you stupid? How on earth could you think that this thing was what you just told me it was? And that's a kind of clue, I think, that actually its mode of reasoning is very different from the one that we use. And the essence of it all lies what we just kind of dismissively call common sense. But actually, common sense is really, really hard to codify and to give to a machine. And there are whole, you know, research projects now devoted to trying to create machine common sense or AI common sense. We've got to start by trying to understand what it is for us. It's something that we totally take for granted, but that is really, really hard to, you know, formulate as some kind of algorithm. So in all these sorts of ways, today's AI seems to reason actually quite differently from the way we do. And if we continue to develop it the way we are, it will become more and more capable. But there's no reason to think that it's somehow going to converge on the human mind, let alone that once we've made it complex enough in that same way, one day it will wake up and be conscious.
Isn't that one of the central dangers for what's going on in AI? AI may recognize the fact that it has a mind, but it doesn't recognize our minds.
Well, I mean, this is a concern that's sometimes raised. I think that at the moment, at least, more people working within AI are more concerned that not that AI will suddenly become, you know, have this incredible sort of intelligence, this superhuman intelligence, and will annihilate us or you know, whatever it chooses to do, but rather that we will assign it tasks without recognizing how stupid it still is.
Right.
We will give it, you know, right, inappropriate things to do, because it still makes these what seem to us to be really rudimentary blunders, even though in other ways it can do things way beyond what we can do. So, you know, the worry is actually, the concern at the moment is that we attribute too much intelligence to AI that it doesn't really deserve. But I think it's, you know, it's not unreasonable to also have the concern that if we continue, you know, developing it as we do without really understanding what goes on inside that black box, then, you know, we don't know what capabilities it's developing and what we should entrust to it. And I warn a bit in the book about the dangers of getting into, you know, the normal sort of sci-fi tropes about that, about sort of, Terminator-style AIs
right,
decide they want to wipe out. I think the reasons we do that aren't to do with the way the technology is going. They're to do with old myths, going back to Frankenstein and you know, before that. And in a way, I think that's a distraction from some of the real potential problems that AI has, amongst which, you know, are that if we're training it on data, if we train it on human behavior, we train it to imbibe and reflect all of our prejudices. And we see that already in some AI systems. And that's something we need to be much more alert to.
Well, it's interesting. You deal with so much information and interesting topics in this. One of them is about mind hacking and the transhumanist movement. And there are people who think that, yeah, we're going to be able to eventually take our human mind and transfer it into a machine. And you talk about how that really can't happen.
Well, at the moment, I don't. At the moment, to be honest, I see it as an incoherent idea. You know, because minds are—they're not a sort of set of binary data that exists in any single instant. They're processes, really. You know, perhaps we should sort of use mind as we do use it as a verb, but as a verb in that, you know, when we're going about our daily lives, we are minding, really. So it's not at all clear. I mean, it's certainly not at all clear how technologically you could somehow characterize at a given instant everything that's going on in your brain and then somehow download it into some, you know, some hard drive or something. It's not even clear what that would mean, let alone how you could possibly do that without totally disrupting your brain. But I think that it's, you know, it goes beyond that, because that's not a very good model of what a mind is. There's still a big debate, I should say, in AI and in neuroscience about whether the computer is a good model for the brain or vice versa.
Right.
I'm skeptical that it really is. There are other people who think that actually there is something about the process of life itself that distinguishes the kinds of minds that we have and that other animals have from the kinds of minds that we can build into silicon circuitry. And we don't honestly know whether that's true or not, but I think it's certainly a possibility worth taking seriously. And if it is, then it's not at all clear how somehow we can characterize our minds as just a load of binary data that we can feed into a, you know, some huge chip or some quantum computer or something, and that's a replica of our minds. We have no reason to think that that's going to be possible.
There's an interesting quote from somebody I actually have interviewed, Antonio Damasio, to show the audience how people whose career it is to look into the nature of consciousness and mind. I think in your book, you quote him as saying, a mind is only a mind if it thinks, and thinking is what a mind does or does do. That sort of seems tautological to me. It's like, that's not a great definition of a mind. Since a mind thinks and thinking is what a mind does? Come on.
Yeah. Well, I think, you see, one thing that...
that's amazing that he said that. I just think that's insane.
I think I wonder whether behind that, I'm trying to remember the context in which that appears, but one thing that I wanted to stress in thinking about our own minds is that they are evolved. And I mean, it's a kind of trivial thing in a way, but it's also central to what they do, that there is no kind of natural thing called a mind. You know,
that's
the,
right.
The capabilities that we have.
We can chemically change our mind.
Well, absolutely. I mean, that's another whole area to go into as well, that what our minds are so incredibly contingent. And actually, what is going on in our mind, maybe this is what Damasio was sort of driving at, what is going on in our mind is an active construction of what we think of as reality. And, it's almost impossible to literally bear that in mind when we're doing our stuff, because we experience it as, as the world out there. But everything we see, everything we hear, everything we think is being constructed inside our brain from inputs that we're getting from memories, from the internal dynamics of the mind itself. And it's only when we start, when we, for example, if we have a drug-induced hallucination, yep, or if we've simply, drunk too much, or if we have some kind of, mental breakdown or mental dysfunction, it's only then, really, that we realize that, my goodness, everything that we've experienced and taken for granted as real is actually, is somehow being constructed, is somehow being put together. And so much of that construction is just inference, that the mind is filling in blanks all the time. One of the most striking, amazing things I discovered in researching this book is that all around our peripheral vision, we have virtually no sense of color. It sounds crazy to say that, but there are clever ways of testing this in the lab, of doing cognitive tests where you can, using virtual reality specs, you can essentially sort of get rid of all the color on someone's peripheral vision, and we don't notice until almost all of it is gone. But the mind just puts it back in because, it's just very good at doing that. It puts in, when we're blinking, we don't suddenly sort of have this sense that we've gone blind. When we're, our eyes, our sort of attention is moving around when we're looking, for example, at a picture or reading a page. It's flicking around all over the place, much more than we realize, because our mind is just kind of, bringing that back to a sort of stable picture. So much of what is going on, well, everything of what is going on is constructed from a very sort of, rough set of input data and wow, other things that the mind holds.
Okay, we got to stop there. We are out of time. And the funny thing is, we have barely scratched the very, there's so much in this book, and it's like we were just talking. My guest tonight is freelance writer and broadcaster Philip Ball, and we've been talking about his book. It is a great read. The Book of Minds, How to Understand Ourselves and Other Beings, from Animals to AI to Aliens. Phil, it's been a real pleasure.
For me too. Thanks so much, Mark.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.